search. Each man different, living his own way, searching, discovering numero uno.
Welcome, BBSers, to episode number 152 of the Broken by Concept podcast, the number one solo queue educational and motivational podcast. Curtis, today we've definitely got a hyper educational episode for you guys here.
Another case study.
An educational study.
This is the rare episode. This is a one in a trillion case study.
And these are fantastic because these are like, you know, real life, real world examples. Seeing the language behavior of a player and matching it with the gameplay. Is that sort of what we do with our case studies, Curtis?
You know, one of the flaws of the podcast, Nathan, and what we've tried to do with the Curtis's Clips Corner is tie it back to the gameplay. It's very hard to critique one's thoughts, comments, narratives about a game without seeing how does this person behave on the Rift. And so what today's episode, I believe a huge part of it is about is pairing one's comments to the way they navigate on the Rift. Kind of what we did with the Nice case study, right?
And also the Freak one as well.
And the Freak one as well, because you can say anything. Right, you can say anything without looking at their gameplay. So this is what it's going to be really about, tying back to matching gameplay. How does the gameplay add up with the narrative? Where does it spawn? Why that narrative might be created? And remember, today isn't just about this one guy, right? We are throwing this guy under the bus here a little bit. And he is our sacrificial pawn.
That's
here.
That's what I view as a sacrificial pawn for the greater good of the community.
That's right. Because there are people that might have some of these narratives and come on, see this case and be like, you know what? I see myself going down this direction and now I can nip it in the butt, make sure I don't go down that path.
And we know these work because, I mean, if you go to our Nice video case study, the comment section, people are like, yeah, wow, I relate to this. I got a friend like this. And like, oh, I just understood so much more about myself and my solo queue journey from this. So we do these because these do work. They do help the community.
Also, to comment on that one, it's interesting because the Nice one was you either really got it, like you either understood what we were trying to do or you didn't. So it was really interesting. It was kind of like a dividing episode, that one, right? Whereas like the people that felt attacked by that episode because maybe they resonated with Nice's behavior. They were like, okay, fuck these guys, blah, 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 blah. And then the people that got it were like, oh, wow, that actually makes total sense and actually really helpful. It wouldn't surprise me if this is, I wouldn't say not to the same level of controversy.
Well, but Curtis, if you look thinking about the divide, Curtis, the like ratio on that video is 90%.
Right.
92% to 8% dislike. So I wouldn't even say that's a
divide. It's not a divide. It's like there's a
portion. There were some very outspoken people about that episode, yes.
Some very angry mob.
That is the, you know, we know that the way comment sections work
in the interwebs,
the minority sort of speak louder than the majority. That's right.
Yep. So where do you want to start here, Nathan?
So first, let's get some context. Why are we choosing this person? So this is, we've had a bit of a back and forth. He's sort
this
of
like a trilogy, isn't it? Because it started 3 weeks ago or something, right?
Yeah. This started 3 weeks ago from a summer school Reddit post that we found.
Well, so let's, for people who haven't, you know, weren't watching the previous episodes, let's like run through the timeline.
We'll run through the timeline and we'll get some of this guy's comments because we're gonna look at the gameplay here in a moment here, guys. So it started from, you know, just our summoner school section of our podcast that we've sort of introduced at the beginning of this year. And there was a podcast thread that got a lot of attention on the summoner school post. And it stood out to me because the guy said the title of the post was, "What could keep me in gold for over 40,000 games?" You know, and you think about that, it's like, okay, that's a lot of League of Legends.
It's a red flag, and that's we needed to investigate, see what's going on there.
And specifically what he said here is that he says, "I just don't know what I'm doing wrong. Other people can climb just fine, but I'm stuck, even if I think I actually play better than them. So what could I do? What could I be personally doing so horribly wrong that even after 40,000 games, I'm still stuck in low gold? And I used to be high plat, hitting diamond promos like 30 times the one season I almost got into diamond. Is there anything that isn't readily obvious?" And he posts his OPGG, and the comments were just berating him about he's playing every champ, every role. He's pretty much a Yuumi main as well.
So we'll review his OPGG in a second, again, to give context before we dive into the gameplay.
And then he also said here, "And if you say I play a lot of champs, know that I have over 100k mastery points in literally everything I play." And then he deleted the thread because he obviously found that the advice was not useful. People were just bullying him, quote unquote. And we address that, and we sort of got up his OPG. I mean, we'll do it again here, right? We'll get up his OPG again. And then the next part of the saga was in our YouTube comment section after that episode.
He watched it.
He watched it, and he commented saying this, and he came back, and then he said, you know, some things. And if you actually look at that, there's like 40 replies in that YouTube comments from our audience, our BBC, is sort of just trying to help him, but also just it's for entertainment as well, because definitely the way that this guy thinks about the game is quite entertaining if you're aware of our podcast.
Well, I would say he is an extreme case, yes. Right? I wouldn't say he's the average, he's the norm.
That's
but
right.
I would say like the underlying narratives though are normal in the sense that like he just has a lot of them, right? Like that's what we're going to try and do to his, that is kind of, I guess, break them down one by one rather than kind of just in a lump sum. Here are all his narratives in one thing, right?
And what he did, the great thing was, is that in those comments, someone talked about, can you actually send us some VODs? And he actually uploaded some VODs, and we've got one here.
Yeah, so he actually sent, I think, a bunch of, like, a VOD library of some of his recent games that he played at the time of the comment. And I thought, wow, this is great. He's actually sent VODs. So we actually downloaded one. We picked the one that was mid. Because it's just easier to review. I think the other ones were at bot lane and support and stuff or something like that. So it's hard for us as a jungle mid coach to really get a lot of value out of that. So we're looking for either a jungle or a mid. There was a mid Akshan one, which we're going to look at today. And something I want to note here is that it's not about this one game again. It's about, you'll see when we get into it, it's a lot more than just the Akshan specifics or mid specifics. Everything that we're going to unpack here today is applicable to every role. Not just mid lane.
And narratives, not just behavior in solo queue, breaking down how the game actually works in winning games, gold experience.
And why one might feel that way while playing League.
So I've got some quotes that could be like used in like an article or something like that from the comment section I sort of farmed. And I just want to sort of read these out just to give you context and going into this VOD and going into this OPGG. So these were some comments literally from our YouTube comment section that he commented. So he said, I bet I'd do fine in Challenger, and I'll probably do better because I could rely on my team to do more than throw the game and feed randomly. If there's any way to see my Season 5 custom games, I will happily show you the game I played against Riot Reigns Light, who was Challenger at the time, and came out of lane extremely fed. The difference between low elo and high elo is not that drastic. It's a lot of luck abusing duo-in and abusing whatever champs are currently balanced to sell skins. Champions in League of Legends are shallow. League players are all predictable. Please stop acting like it takes all of your attention to farm and pilot your champ. It doesn't. League is not complex or hard to learn. Acting like you need to study like a PhD to learn a champion is disingenuous at best and laughable at worst. You can pick up new champions really easily, and it only takes a few games to be able to do everything on autopilot and figure out a build that works for you, or at least for me. If I wasn't able to play the champs, I wouldn't get fed almost every game, would I? We're going to keep acting like all these little micro decisions are just so hard. I was beating Challenger players in lane my first year of playing League when I couldn't even get to gold in ranked. And talking about his Reddit post, he said, like, this is sort of his tone. He's like really frustrated because no one gave him like, you know, advice that he wanted to hear. He says, I made the Reddit post because I wanted advice on how I'm actually playing. To date, no one who read that post or the people in the Broken by Concept podcast actually looked at how I play. They just saw I play a lot of champs and they can't handle it, so they assume I can't either.
That's what we're here to do today. This is what I'm excited about. Love looking at the game. And that's, look, at the end of the day, that's a fair criticism.
Absolutely.
Right? And if you're putting your VODs out there and no one is replying to it, that's fair enough. I can understand where that you're coming from. So that's what today is all about. You've put your money where your mouth is. Now it's time to back it up, right? This is what we're here to do. We're here to break it down. There's two coaches here.
There's a lot of words there, isn't there, Curtis? Lots of
words. A lot of words, and this is what I want to see. So let's you know, dive into the OPGG. I love the rundown here. So Silver 1 at the moment, it looks like he was kind of floating like low gold last time we saw it. Again, a wide variety of champions in random roles like Veigar bot, GP bot, some AD carry, and then some Seraphine bot, and then some Jace, and then and we go down. There was Nico jungle, and then Teemo jungle, and Yumi, and he plays a lot of GP. So to, you know, he plays a wide variety of roles. It seems like he does a lot of bot lane. But then he went through a streak ages ago, a while ago, where he played a lot of Nico jungle when Nico kind of got reworked as well. And it seems to me, and in kind of what he said, that he definitely likes to just play what's strong. What's really interesting here, something that we'll kind of refer to later on, is that you look at this this Aurelion Sol here. He has 31 games of Aurelion Sol with a 42% win rate. He has Milio, new champion, with a high win rate. He's the only real consistent picks is just the Yumi, and he seems to have played Yumi over a long period of time.
Do you want to go over his other seasons as well? Just to
Yeah, sure. Let's take a look at here as well. So this was this season, just to show the amount of champions he's played. Today we're going to be looking at his Akshan, which he has 8 games played. So we'll go now to season.
And he's a pretty good winner. I mean, obviously.
Well, if we actually, size, what's really interesting that we want to talk about, look at the KDAs. Look at the KDAs on a lot of these champions. His KDA on majority of his champions is like incredibly sexy.
Yeah,
right? Like
he's that's what he's mentioned. He says, why do I have good KDAs and I can't win games?
Look at his Akshan KDA as well over these 8 games. Look at these KDAs. He's got very, you know, from on paper, looking like a nice little RPG minus the win rate, right? This was last season. A lot of, you know, a bit of support, a lot of AD carry, Nyla. Jace seems to be a common theme here. Some junglers in here with the Belveth. We'll go even further back to season 11. Look at that. He was actually an Akshan main. Mm-hmm. That's interesting. That was when Akshan, I think, got released, I believe. Correct me if I'm wrong. I felt like it was around there. He looks like he played a lot of Akshan. 148 games of Akshan in season 11. And then just beneath that, Yumi was his second most played. So we're looking at his Akshan today. He was actually a main of Akshan, which is interesting. That's actually very important information.
So he would. This is where, again, he'll think he has lots of Champ Master on Akshan.
Yeah, because he played it three seasons ago. And Akshan actually has changed as a champion from an identity perspective. Going even further back, a lot of support. Still,
this is season 10.
Season 10, there's some small Simira set, some jungle Lilia. Fiddlesticks, there's a few junglers in the mix. Jace seems to be a recurring trend here, but there's a lot of champions. Look, if we scroll down, this was season. So 87 champions, unique champions played in season 20. Sorry, season 10. Season 11, there was 84 unique champions. Last season, 78. And then already in this season, he has played, what was that, 58. Unique champions played. Just to, again, we're really laying the groundwork here, okay?
It's also important to note, you know, we said this guy's on the extreme. Mm. This guy's not a troll. Like, he's genuinely playing a lot of League of Legends. Going to his KDAs and what he says.
So how many games? He's got, like, over 500 games played this season, which is a very solid amount already.
Absolutely. So, yeah, this guy's not just, like, some troll. This is actually a guy who has these genuine beliefs about the game.
Yeah, and I think we really wanted to make sure of that. Like, I was on the fence about even doing this. Like, but then when I started to read and look into it, he's actually not a troll. He's genuinely trying. This is just his beliefs about the game have really, you know, put him in a bad spot. So, you want to dive into the gameplay?
Yep.
All right. So, we're going to start with this screenshot here. So, this is actually the end screen. So, we're doing a Pulp Fiction type Quentin Tarantino style edit here, where we're going to start with the end, and then we're going to kind of go back and reverse engineer. How did we end up here? What is this? So this is the end screen. As you can see, he's typed in chat, in all chat, when every lane ints, not much you can do. And if we go, I think even was it further back here somewhere, he said something else, like saying there's no carrying this.
And to note his score, talking about his KDA, he's 10 kills, 5 deaths, and sorry.
Yep.
Yeah, and 9 assists.
Yep.
So going back to his scoreline, he's saying, okay, like my team's uncarryable. They suck. My team sucks. My KDA looks good. It's just luck. I'm just stuck here because my teammates suck.
So how do we get here, Nathan? That's the important one. All right.
Yep.
So
I'm definitely going to be leaving a lot of this review to Curtis because I've never played Akshan in my life and I'm not a mid player. But again, obviously, you know, I'll be commenting. Again, we're breaking down all the narratives here and looking at the...
And I'm going to try not to get too bogged down in the Akshan specifics here. I will try and mention the things that are important, but try and do my best here. So For those of you listening, we'll try and flesh out as much as we can as well. And I don't think it actually is going to be that much about the gameplay as much as the narratives. So he's playing Arkshan into Aurelion Sol versus a Rengar jungle, okay? Aurelion Sol, classic scaling, hyper-scaling champion. And from, I think it's actually important to note the compositions here as well. So let's actually go over the compositions.
Before we do that, Curtis, can you tell us a little bit about your experience working with Arkshan players in Midland Academy? Yep,
let's do that. So Arkshan is... Okay, so Arkshan's a champion that has evolved over time. When Arkshan was released, he was an early game, hardcore early game champion. Like, the way his base stats worked, like, you would play for solo kills. Like, a lot of the early lane strategies when Arkshan came out was, like, shoving, bouncing, letting the wave come on your side and playing for solo kills. Like, your base stats were so high, and you weren't really played to scale into the mid game. It was more early game. Kind of like think like a Rumble or something, right? Like an early game, like a Rumble, essentially. But then he changed. They altered him because it was too obnoxious. Like, this champ with insane wave clear that can roam and solo kill. It was kind of like ridiculous. It was like really overpowered. And so they adjusted Arkshan over time to now it's in a place where you're more play to scale into the mid game. So I actually work with quite a few high elo Arkshan players, both in NA and EU. One that I work the closest with is a Grandmaster Arkshan player, basically an Arkshan, maybe a two trick, plays Arkshan and something else, can't remember. His name's Max. We've done many, many reviews together, and he's really gone deep on Arkshan to try and figure out this champion.
And how long has he been in the program for?
I think like probably 2 years.
Oh, wow.
I would say roughly.
Do you know where he started at?
I don't. I would have to dig up. I know it's longer than a year, way longer than a year. So it's in a year to 2 years. But now he's Grandmaster. And yeah, so he's really gone deep on trying to figure out Arkshan. And he got a lot of inspiration from this, I think, a top Korean Arkshan player. And that Arkshan player in Korea plays very conservative. He basically values his farm extremely highly, values his XP extremely highly. Basically plays for like level 9, you know, when you get your Q maxed, and then you just kind of shove and then get your one item and then you shove and then you can roam. So the days are past where you play to roam early, sacrifice waves and do that, because the champion fundamentally requires a lot of items. And when you get behind the curve, you're basically screwed because you don't have the strength to bolster up your champion. This is a bit of a tangent, but something that a lot of people forget about champions in League of Legends. When a champion has utility, there's always a trade-off, right? You can't have utility and a lot of damage, right? If you have utility, they got to cut something out of your kit, right? So think of a champion like Talia or Ryze or Pantheon. These champions have a hardcore utility ultimate, right? So in duels, a lot of the time, they're not as strong because they have three damaging abilities, whereas a lot of these other champions have four damaging abilities, right? When you think of Arkshan, Arkshan's R is essentially useless. His W does nothing as well. His Q is kind of whatever. It's just wave clear. His only major damage is his E and then auto attacks. Mm. So as a result of that, he's very dependent on items. He doesn't have a kit in terms of actual abilities that can bolster up his damage, and not to mention he has to get value out of the stealth and the wave clear to shove and roam, use stealth, create man advantages. Does that kind of make sense?
Yep, so that's big picture about Arkshan and your experience working with your
that's correct.
Your Grandmaster Arkshan player in NA.
Yep, and even to this day, Max, the way we did a review this week, you know, we are now at the point where it's like, if you get behind early, you mess up, you die once, the game is very hard to win because the champ sucks from behind. Mm. That's just the reality of Arkshan. Very similar to many of these other early game champions. It's similar in jungle, right? With Rek'Sai, you fail your first game, you die at level 3, your game is going to be hard.
Very difficult.
Okay. So these are the compositions here. We'll read them out. So he's got a Malphite top, Jarvan jungle. He's the Arkshan mid with a Kate Ali bot. Versing a Darius top, Rengar jungle, Azor mid with a Xayah Thresh bot on the enemy team here. Now, you know, in terms of what I think is worth noting, from a scaling perspective, right? Azor, hardcore scaler, typically quite good at these elo brackets and low gold, high silver because of the, you know, ease of execution getting to the mid to late game as well. Rengar, not much threat early game. Going to provide threat post 6. And then you got this Darius into Malphite, right? So Darius typically better in lane. Malphite has a big wombo combo ultimate. I think the only thing I would really want to highlight here as well is just from a damage spread perspective, depending on the build of this Malphite, they could have a lot of AD. Would you agree with that, depending on this guy?
Yep, that's a heavy AD comp, I'll be saying.
Pretty heavy AD composition, okay? Was there anything else you want to add here before we get in?
Nope.
All right. So, getting into the lane phase here. Versing an Azol, obviously you're going to get a lot of priority here. Does a pretty good job proccing his passive. Typically, the stock standard way of playing Akshan lanes is kind of have the wave more in the middle. Get level 2 first, and then you fish for like a level 2 trade with your E.
Your E's the swing.
That's the hook shot type thing, right? You don't really want to shove the first wave too fast, because then the wave will be too close to the enemy's tower, and then you won't be able to swing onto them. But overall, this is not too bad. He ends up taking some very nice Q auto trades, chunks Azol to about a quarter HP by level 1.
So this is great, right?
This is good. This is very good, right? Great trades utilizing Akshan's strong early lane here. And obviously Azol, one of the weakest early laners. He actually goes for a very aggressive all-in onto the Azol under tower and ends up dying here at level 2. So before we get into what he types here, let's just really take a look at this. When I look at this, I don't really mind it at the end of the day. It's a crazy limit test, don't get me wrong. And we can get into the micro execution. There's like in terms of the E placement here and, you know, just shoving the wave. Like he could have been more patient here and got the wave in on the tower. It's like
small wins mindset you could apply here.
Maybe, but like, you know, especially if you see an opportunity, you know, this is what I'll call a pretty stock standard limit test.
Yeah.
You know, I think I'm not going to berate him for this play. It's obviously a pretty game losing play. Don't get me wrong. You just die to I think Azol gets the kill here. No, he actually dies at the tower. So it's actually not terrible, right? Because Aurelion Sol doesn't get the kill here. So to give context to the listeners, he basically goes for a level 2 dive, messes it up, and dies. I was actually scared that he would die to the jungler there, to be honest. But what he types in chat after that was that, how was I not in range? So nothing too toxic or anything like that. So that's pretty straightforward. What he's lucky with is that the wave's coming back to him. So who cares, right? It doesn't really matter. He doesn't miss too much. Maybe he could have froze here. I'm not really going to go too into detail there, but fair enough. So he comes back. He's chilling. We'll fast forward a little bit here. He's got a very nice little slow build. I respect it. Keeping up his farm. Malphite solo kills. That was a solo kill, was it? Malphite solo killed. Oh, no, it was a gank. Jarvan gank top. Malphite gets a gank top. Gets a bunch of prior mid. Sees the junglers fighting in the river. And is able to get a pretty nice collapse. And this is what prior does for Akshan. You have really great wave clear. You get that prior in the early lane. You're able to help your jungler. Great. Pretty solid as well, right? Now, this is where the shenanigans start to unfold. So Akshan, having got the assist, swings back to lane, is sitting on 800 gold. Because he has no swing, the Azol sees a window to actually go for a bit of a trade here. And so you'll see in here in a second, Azol kind of goes for a bit of a trade, procs like a comet or whatever. Was that the comet? Yeah, that was it. Yeah, procs. I think he procs the comet, did he here? No, I think it was just a passive. Goes for a bit of a trade onto the Azol goes for a bit of a trade onto the Akshan. He's now chunked. Now, priority number one for an Akshan here would be try and get the wave out and go for a bit of a reset, because you're sitting on a lot of gold right now and you're quite chunked here. Now, look, I would argue that this swing, even back to lane, even coming back here, was a little bit questionable. I think it would be much better to hold this for defense's purposes, especially since right now your priority as an Akshan should just be to get the wave out as fast as you possibly can and get out, basically get in, get out.
Yep.
The problem with using E back to lane like this is now you're kind of exposed.
Yep. And the huge cooldown has 18 seconds on the Akshan E.
Even here, to a certain extent, though, he actually shouldn't even have queued the Azol here. He should have saved his queue for the wave. And just queue the wave.
Like, so the intention here is he shouldn't be looking to fight. It's to push the wave in and reset. So we're sorted. So now we're
getting into the details.
We're starting to see his true level of skill displayed. You know, and remember, guys, like he's done lots of great stuff early game. Yeah. But remember, skill and your rank is across the entire game, across a long period amount of game. So, you know, you might have strengths in some areas. Like maybe he's really good at matchups in the early stages. But this is where we're going to potentially see the lack in and where his rank's going to shine.
And consistency. And consistency comes from fundamentals, really, at the end of the day. And so here you can tell his intention is a little bit all over the place. And now because he's swung back to lane and really didn't focus the wave and... because Aesop actually used his abilities onto Akshan. He could have used that as a window, in my opinion, to get the wave out. But he kind of like hesitates here, and because he didn't have his Q up, he couldn't get the wave. So Aesol was able to kind of like somewhat zone here. And as a result, Aesol was able to punish the Akshan and force the Akshan out of lane. So he doesn't die, but he's forced to recon. I think he loses a little bit of farm here. So not an amazing reset. Doesn't get the wave out. He's gonna lose a bit of farm. Comes back, sees the Aesol overextended in the lane, and was able to get a nice little kill. So again, this Aesol overstayed, disrespected the Akshan. Akshan was able to come back to lane and kill the Aesol. So when I look at this, you know, this game state, the biggest thing that's concerning to me is already the CS. We're 27 CS by 5 minutes 30. Typically not really good for an Akshan, especially since the early lane, you want to be really getting good CS, get to those items and get the ball rolling, right? So we'll see here in a second. I don't know what this is. So like, he's like half-assed the wave, misses his Q on the wave. Maybe he thinks the wave is going to come back to
him.
That's
right. Yes, that's what he thinks. Yeah.
But then what's really weird is that he goes bot here, hovers into the river. I don't really know what he's doing here.
He's on 20% HP, by the way.
Yeah, so he's on 20% HP. So he kind of wastes a bit of time. Aesol comes back. Look, I can see if his intention was to get a reset off because the wave's coming back to him, it's understandable, given the benefit of the doubt there. So, comes back straight out of base, goes back mid, looks for another nice little trade here onto the Aesol. A very weird trade here. So, for the listeners, I mean, it's hard to even describe what he even does here, but the reason this is not good is because even though you get an okay trade, you're missing the wave under the tower. So, already we're starting to see a trend form here where he's valuing trading over farming, and he's not really... You can just tell he's not emphasizing the resources. So still now, it's 6 minutes 30 into the game, and he's not even on 30 CS here.
And he's level 5.
And he's level 5. So to give a bit of context, what actually happens here is because he's missed so much farm and his resets have been suboptimal and because of all the early shenanigans and the death to the Aesol, he's actually behind in XP. So as we come back to lane here, he's level 5 and the Aesol's level 6. So
base stats are important in League of Legends.
Base stats are quite important. And so... he tries to go for the all-in here onto the Aesol, basically screws his positioning, and now he's trying to greed his way back mid. Aesol's like, what the hell? You have no E, you have no flash, you're level 5. I can just sit here and stand my ground and kill you. And so here, Aesol even misses ultimate and is able to get a really nice kill onto the Akshan. Now the game is really hard, right? Now you've really messed up big time here. Right, and I think this is where it gets interesting. He said,
"I remember going back to what he said at the end. Remember, we went to the end of the game. He said this game's uncarryable. All my lanes, what was that?
That's right. Two losing, yeah, can't carry sides lanes or whatever.
And look at what we're seeing here already. This is what I'll call a mid losing already.
Yeah,
and against a scaling champion,
against an Aesol. And so then he proceeds after this solo death here to type in chat. Hey guys, let's make an early game champ. What is it? Hey guys, let's make a hyperscaling, able to fight early champion genius. So basically he's critiquing Riot for Aesol, which is, and this, I think we, now let's just take a step back let's and try and analyze. Back, this yeah. is where we need to really dig deep. So this is a defense mechanism, really, ultimately. It's a form of a defense mechanism. He's failing to emphasize how he's contributed to the situation. How would you interpret this, Nathan?
Yeah, it's about not respecting the small details. Like he said before in his narratives listing off, he apparently doesn't really care too much for the small details. Apparently they don't matter that much. League's a really simple game. It's easy to learn. That's how I actually describe that when I see that. It's just there's no respect for all the basics, the fundamentals of the game. And again, as you said, how he's contributed now to the state of Irelandsol being able to kill him because he's a level ahead. That's simple.
Yeah, and like the small details, I think, of the execution, of the quality of the E, the quality of his early game resets, you being a level behind or some XP behind in that situation, it's all the small things kind of adding up to create that scenario. If you had taken maybe a better quality trade, maybe taken it easy, maybe taken a short trade first and then Wave's in a good spot. He can go for another trade later on when his E comes back up. Maybe go for a short E trade, pop back, all's good. Or wait for his six or whatever. If he had six in that exchange, he would have won that. Mm. He actually would have won that all in, even despite the questionable E and all that. He actually would have won that because he could have just kept his distance and eyed him and killed him. So, yeah, there's a defense mechanism. There's a failure, a lack of respecting of the small details, thinking that he can kind of slam his face on the keyboard. Whatever.
My champion should auto win because my champion is early game champ against late game scanner champ. The way that it should work is that no matter what I do, I can make mistakes and I still win. That's a narrative that people have all the time. And that's not how League of Legends works. That's not how skirmishing works.
Yeah, that's actually a really, really good point. Yeah, he's basically
Binary thinking. In League of Legends, black and white thinking is the biggest thing that keeps people stuck and just how narratives get spawned very easily.
Yeah, we might even be able to dig deep here. This could very well be, maybe he's attached to Akshan of Season 11, right? Maybe because he was an Akshan basically, you know, main in Season 11 when Akshan was really strong. Maybe he's attached to that early game identity or base stats, Akshan OP, I should be able to do this. On paper, Akshan, really strong early game, Aesol hyperscaling. Heard though, I should be able to slam my face in the keyboard to kill him. Yeah, you're spot on. He's overgeneralizing the identities of the champion and using that as an excuse to justify what happens.
I say that all the time. For example, I've done a Fiddlesticks review I can remember very, very fondly of. It was Fiddlesticks against a Jarvan, and Jarvan's, but if you look at black and white, Jarvan's really good into Fiddlesticks because you can easily cancel his fear. He is very immobile. You can easily pick off the fiddle. Jarvan does a really bad level 3 gank, gets chunked. All his camps are up. Fiddlesticks is level 4. Easiest opportunity to invade and kill him on all his bot camps. But he said to me, I don't do this because Jarvan is stronger than me. And he just missed an opportunity to win the game that quickly. Again, that really is a disservice to a lot of players.
And this is the champ mastery kicking in as well.
Absolutely.
The lack of champ mastery. Because if you really are a master of your champion, you understand what your champion's capabilities are, you're gonna know these interactions. You're going to know what you can and can't get away with. Your understanding of limits is going to be significantly better. But it gets interesting. Okay, so he comes back. He's now 1-2. Now look at the CS here. 28 CS by 7 minutes. Right? This is already, you know, borderline end of review, right? And he's very really critiquing because Aesol had no AP. I think he bought like a tier 1 boots and like a cloth armor or something, I think. So he comes back. Now, this is interesting. So he actually here, half-ass shoves the wave. He actually doesn't fully shove the wave.
Just highlighted the size of the wave right now. So yeah.
Let's go back.
It's huge.
So he kind of like half-ass shoves the wave. The wave doesn't crash mid. So here he had a choice. He could either slow build this one or just hard shove the next one, right? He could stay and hard shove the next one. He's an Akshan, right? You have wave clear. You could easily do that.
So the fundamental is probably not thinking about here. He's not looking at where the next wave is. He probably thought that was in. I reckon that's
right.
What happened there.
Now the other thing, let's talk about, again, roaming fundamentals. This is a terrible roam, right? We actually did this on a Curtis's clip the other day, right? Where the other episode where if you come out of base, you should be processing information about what's happening in the side wave. And that's going to tell you or give you a large indication of what you can and can't do off your prior off this wave. You should already know as you're walking back to lane what you're going to do with your priority here, right? Or what you're going to do with the wave in the first place. Because he's busy typing, right? He's not actually looking at what's happening on the map. And so when he shoves, why the hell would he go bot? We have no idea what's happening with the wave.
This is a complete coin flip.
There's no, they're not even in
Burger
lane.
Flip.
They're not even in lane. He's just praying that they randomly rock it. We have no idea. This is a complete flip. If it works, you're a genius. If it doesn't, you're an idiot. You know, what is this? This is the definition of an inconsistent decision.
Yes.
This is it. This in a nutshell is the most, this is welcome to inconsistency.
Yeah. This is now the rank is making a lot of sense. Yes. I remember guys, we always say the rank system makes sense.
It makes sense. Reviewed, you may not understand it, but it makes sense.
You got to trust us on this guys because we've reviewed thousands of games. Yes. I've never been confused by someone's in their rank ever.
No.
And this is from full.
And if I am, it means I'm missing something and there's something there under the surface that I haven't just seen yet.
That's right.
It always makes sense. That quote, right? Everything makes sense. If it doesn't, it's just your view of reality. That's really what it is.
Your view of the reality is the problem.
That's right. So he goes bot. waste time, misses all that farm mid because there's actually kind of, he's getting denied all that farm, goes for a deep ward. Aesol just catches all that.
That wave. Massive wave, by the way. Like, that's like 12 minions, by the way.
So he's now at 33 CS by 8 minutes, okay? So now we are 8 minutes into the game. Malphite's doing an okay job topside. Bot lane's kind of even. Jungle's doing okay.
Yep.
Comes back mid. Fast forward a little bit. Plays for a bit of prior here into the Aesol, which is great. Misses a bit of farm, but it is what it is. Now, let's take a look at this one. So he shoves that wave and then hovers topside this time. Now, this one's a little bit better, right? Because the Jarvan is hovering topside. So typically, a good fundamental is like if your jungler is looking to make a play somewhere, as a mid laner, it's good to hover them and just be in the
play
area.
Playing with numbers is always a good idea in League of Legends.
And I don't know what he does after this, but like, oftentimes I'll tell people, get to about the halfway point and then just assess. And you can always go back mid. You're not fully committed here. You don't need to like fully commit. You can always assess your options here. So let's see what he does. It looks like he fully commits. He overcommits it, actually. He actually gets lucky that Aesol doesn't shove that midway faster, to be honest. So starts the rift. What do you think about this one, Nathan?
I'm a jungler. I like to be helped on the rift. And I'm happy with my minion lane to lose a little bit of farm. Yeah. But, you know, just to note again, as the Akshan, we're 35 CS at 9 minutes in the game.
Yeah.
I think it's fine.
Okay. So Aesol tries to contest. Rengar's coming here as well. Tries to finish off. Ends up playing it pretty well. Kiting out, not
really
too bad.
Awesome.
So let's just really look at this one again. So first things first, something I want to critique on here. There's many ways we're looking at this. Like you could look at it from a perspective of if Aesol's moving here, it's highly likely that Rengar's also here, right?
Yeah, so you should never be walking that way. You're basically cut off.
Well, it's a bit of a flip to just send it with your E like that. Yes, you know what I mean?
Now I look at that, isn't a huge flip.
Like, you're literally just... Because your Jarvan has used all your abilities on the Rift. Your Jarvan can't do anything here. Like, the flag's on the ground.
This is again, an example of the inconsistency showing again.
It works this time. Yeah. And the reason it only works
I haven't got
time.
Tricked by the review. I'm looking at Lacer like, this is so good. But yeah, this the decision-making is not consistent.
What you've got tricked by there is that in hindsight, it's like what's it called? There's a bias. It's like results bias. Results-based analysis. Whatever it is.
Yes, that's right.
It's like you're looking at the end result and justifying the means. And that's probably what he's done. He's probably thinking, "Fuck yeah, I'm the best Akshan in the world. I beat these guys even though I'm behind. Look at me, just mechanics max and beat these guys." You know, at the end of the day, if Rengar is in that bush right behind the Aesol, you just get one shot. You're just dead.
You're dead. Double killed.
You're literally just dead right there. Right, but what just happened here is that Rengar wasn't as close. Just by chance, they go in one by one, and then he plays it well on the back end. I'm not denying that, but it was a flip.
Yes,
it was a flip. But so he goes back mid. Okay, that wave doesn't crash either. Actually, that wave doesn't crash either. So you can tell he doesn't give a flying fuck about farm here. So now we are approaching 9 minutes 30, 36 CS by 9 minutes 30 here. So there is so much disgraceful decision-making by 9 minutes 30. The fact that you were even remotely considering winning this game is mind-boggling to me.
Yeah.
Like, absolutely mind-boggling.
It's unfair to the game. It's not how League of Legends works. It's not the shared identity of Akshan.
But it's just not the game of League of Legends, like just inconsistent behavior. So at this stage of the game, he's got the stars have aligned. You know, Malphite's doing well topside. Jarvan's got those early kills thing. So Rengar's messed up pretty hardcore this game. And your bot lane seems to be stable in the 2v2. He's got winning lanes. Like, he's doing great. He's hit the jackpot.
Yeah.
Like, he's actually hit the jackpot here. All right.
The only person that's made this game hard for his team is him.
He's himself.
Because he's making Aurelion Sol really strong.
And he's making himself weak. So he comes back to lane. Okay, let's take a look at this one. So it looks like he just sees action bot, like he sees the bot lane is in bot, and just decides to run bot. The midway's mid, he's just ignoring it. Again, notice I love the camera panning here. Look at the camera panning. Zero camera panning. We have no idea what's going on. I don't know what they're using, how high they are, how low they are. We have no... We're going in blind. This is the Terry special. This is a throwback, isn't it, to the Terry clip, right? Where you TP in and then
the locked camera.
Locked camera TP play, right?
Yeah.
He gets to about here and then he's like, okay. What should I do here? Still, he doesn't know because how do you know?
I can't see it.
I don't know. He's trying to figure out without, and then he finally pans his camera. But this is the thing, man. You've already committed. You're already losing the mid farm. There is no decision to be. You've already made the decision. You see what I mean?
Yes.
You've made the decision with your actions rather than you're fully committed to the bot wave here. Right? And so he's got here and he's like, well, you know, this is again kind of sunk cost fallacy in my mind. He's already roamed all the way here. He's got to make it work, right? You're on this far. So now he's fighting the Rengar, does some fancy footwork, nearly kills the Rengar there. And lucks out pretty hard. Hey, yet again. All right, he's lucking out. And look, to be fair, he played this pretty well. I would say played this pretty well mechanically. If we're going to go back here, kite it out. Did a nice little E there. Look, he played it pretty well mechanically, but it was very, very lucky. How does he know that Rengar's just going to run at his face and then they're all going to chase and then they're all going to flow in one by one? And, you know, like this is not like this was calculated. Right? But he gets the kill again at the sacrifice of farm here. That's the key point here. 36 CS by 10 minutes 40. Okay. So it looks like he's going on another little hunt here, utilizing the Akshan passive.
Just know what Aurelion Sol is doing right now.
So this is, so basically for those of you who don't know, like the Akshan passive, right? It lights up a path. If the enemy has killed your teammate within a minute, there's like a thing on them.
I did not know that.
And so it's like a stream here. And so this stream tells you the location of that person. And then if you follow that stream, it gives you movement speed and I think mana regen. And I think you get extra gold for killing that target. And it revives whoever's dead.
That's so good.
But they're all alive, yep. So it wouldn't do anything, right? Yep. So this is like while you're here, you know, he's already missed all the mid lane farm. I don't mind this. He might as well get the kill. So like, you know, it kind of suits his style here. Malphite solo killing topside, which is great for him.
A Darius, which is a counter matchup.
Winning the counter matchup. So makes his way back mid here. This Aurelion Sol overextends pretty hardcore. Jarvan gets a very nice gank off and they're able to kill the A-Sol. Bit of an unnecessary R there, but gets the kill. So we get a nice little gank there from the Jarvan. Bit lucky, but you know, I wouldn't say that's luck. That's just solo queue, right? That's actually not luck. That's just people make mistakes. That's all good. All right. So fast forwarding, stays for a bunch of plates. Does give A-Sol a lot of tempo. It'll be interesting to see what A-Sol does with the tempo. Oh my goodness. All right, let's get in. This is spicy. So to give a bit of context, right, that he ganked bot. It came out, it worked. He went into the enemy jungle without going mid, killed the enemy jungler, and went mid, got a gank from his jungler, killed the A-Sol. So at this stage, he's basically made kind of, you know, we talk about it in chess moves. He's made three moves in one. He's broke the laws here. He's gone bot. Actually, it wasn't even a move, really. When you think about it, he actually ditched mid-wave, went bot, forced a play, somehow worked out, made a play on the enemy jungle, finished off the dragon, and then gone back mid without touching a mid-wave the entire time. Okay, still now 40 CS by 11 minutes here. Just to give context for people who don't understand, about, I think it's around 15 CS is about a kill's worth in gold. 15. Just something to keep in mind here. So, gets another kill. Now, after this kill, he shoves the wave, stays mid for three plates. So now he's sitting on 1,800, nearly 1,900 gold.
So right now, you would already say his tempo's already completely screwed right now just by hitting the plates. And he's doubled down in now by looking for another play
on this amount of gold. This is the
fourth chess turn.
This is the fourth chess turn. It was fifth, really. Yeah, maybe fourth or fifth, yeah. And so he's going for another play.
The
fifth. Here.
The fourth one was the plates. So this is.
And again, he's kind of going in blind with the lack of camera panning. I don't really know what he's seeing here. He definitely lacks roaming fundamentals. Like he's basically sending it and hoping that it kind of works. And again, the stars align here. Thresh hooks in. He's a genius. Alistar does an incredibly nice little headbutt there under the tower. Wow, Alistar plays that very well and gets another kill. So. Okay, we need to do a stock take here. Snapshot.
The snapshot again.
So much happened in that like minute and a half. It's unbelievable.
That is demonstrating his lack of understanding of League of Legends.
So when I look at gameplay like this, basically what he's doing, he's playing a team death. This is like a Call of Duty team death.
Fortnite,
cross, COD, zombies, whatever you want to call it. Running around the map, playing, you know, throw all strategy, throw any thought process out the window, and just shove and move, right? And when you
not even shove and move,
it's not even shove, literally just move.
He's failed to shove many ways.
It's just move, right? Now, when you play like this, you're either going to be completely useless, or you're going to hit the jackpot and somehow pick up a few kills. And even then, you're actually still not going to be that strong because, again, you're losing a lot of farm. You're actually trading resources, right? Because your mid lane is also, opposing mid lane is also getting really strong. You're losing a lot of farm. So what we saw here was a lot of luck, right? He's just kind of being there, hope that it kind of works out. In this case, it does somehow work out because he's in the area. And now, if we actually look at kind of the scoreboard, he's 6-2.
So he's thinking he's playing this, he's carrying. This is what he would probably be thinking
right now. He's carrying all the noobs, right? He's ganking the side lanes, killing everyone. He's
high map impact, high impact player.
High impact gaming. Now, what's interesting when you play like this, by the way, is that you kind of put all the eggs in your basket because he's also taking all the kills, by the way. He's taking all these kills. He's 6-2. So you're putting all the eggs in your basket here, not to mention, you know, the enemy ASOL is also going to be incredibly strong. So, you know, when I see a player like this, you can't make a single mistake from this point onwards. If you're going to play like this and ditch waves and just get kill after kill after kill, you can't really die anymore. But this is the key thing. This is where Arcshan specifics really come into play. You know, you're behind in XP, really far behind. He's the same level as the 80 carry. He's the same level as the jungler and the 80 carry. He should be like Malphite. He should be level 10 by now. Right, Malphite's level 10.
And we're talking literally just
bottom of level 8. Just yeah. Hitting level 8. So not even
extremely far behind.
Extremely far behind, right? So we'll continue on. Okay, let's take a look at this one. So has Rengar showed on the map here? He has not. So he's going pretty ham here. Again, getting a little bit lucky here, right? He basically blindly ease in onto the enemy without any knowledge whatsoever about Rengar's location. Rengar with R, right? He goes in, tries to all in the ASOL. Rengar looks like just out of range.
What we're seeing here again is the narrative of I am Akshan, I am stronger than Aurelion Sol. I need to go in every opportunity I can go in because I kill him every time.
And he actually luckily survives the Rengar. Rengar wasn't in range, wasn't able to get the ulti off. Malphite again, solo killing topside. So his topside's dominating at this point. Now he's 14-4.
His team.
His team is 14-4. Ends up staying for a plate. Now this is a better roam. At least he, like, you know, the wave hasn't come mid yet and he's complimenting his jungler. This kind of makes sense.
We've done step one well, but again, there's no pan in whatsoever. No. Once again.
Ends up going for a bit of an invade into the jungle here with his jungler. Kills the ASOL. Not too bad. I mean, I don't mind these plays because you're kind of complimenting the jungler a little bit here. End up burning the empowered ASOL R as well, which is huge. So, you know, ASOL's made many mistakes this game. This ASOL is, you know, obviously in silver 1, gold 4 for a reason as well, right? So anyway, he's doing really well. Gets mid tower here. Well, I'm honestly, he's doing really well. I don't know what you would get. He's playing, I guess.
He's playing, yes.
So now he's 6-2, yeah. 68 CS by 15 minutes, broken the mid tower. That 1.5 items working towards his Bork from what it seems like, yeah. So see some action bot side here. Ditches mid wave. Gets the passive stream here. Sees if he can clean up. Again, camera panning, definitely an issue. Tries to go in. Let's see what he can do here. Ends up flashing out. Tries some mechanics max. Doesn't end up working all that well for him. Ends up burning his flash. Goes for another play. Holy moly. So what we're seeing here really is some crazy tower dives. I'm just gobsmacked. So I don't really know what to say this is. I guess desperate for kills, right? He's basically, you know, trying to clean up some kills on bot side.
He's definitely very kills focused. And I mean, I don't really know exactly the way Akshan E works, but I think there is kill threat there, is there not? Or
well, he's just not in range. No, he's just not in range there.
But can he get in range?
Well, the danger of getting in range is that maybe you're in flay range.
Yeah,
you know?
It's hard. Yeah. But again, just showing again the way that he views the game is kills. Low HP target.
Just get the wave. A kill, an opportunity will present itself. Like, I actually don't even like him going bot. Like, the plate, like, you can hover. As soon as Caitlyn's dead here, just go back mid, shove out mid wave, and compliment your Jarvan on Rift, or just shove him and kill the Acel or something. You're ahead of the Acel. You can kill the Acel on repeat now if you really wanted to, you know? So I don't even really like this play in the first place. Because, I mean, but if you go for it, okay, whatever, but now at least play for the wave. Shove the wave out and then, you know, do that. But now you're not getting any farm. Acel's denying you all that farm mid. Acel actually got mid tower and a bounty mid tower off that as well. So Jarvan does clean him up for it, but Acel did get quite a bit of gold from that. So it's going to fast forward again. Bot lane end up getting their tower in the 2v2, so they did well in the 2v2. Malphite yet again. His top lane is solo killing top. So his team's doing really, really well. His team drew Dragon on bot side. So you can tell right now he's really lost. He doesn't really know what to do, right? He's broken mid tower. And this is very common, actually, for a lot of low goal players and stuff. Like, and even in my mid lane school, they get lost in mid game. They don't really know where to be or what to do. You know, this is where playing around secondary win cons really comes into play. Like, who is your next strongest member? Be around them and slash be there for major fights. As Akshan, though, like, you just get to your major spikes, you know, and, you know, just, you know, kind of keep up your farm. Like, I don't mind this hover topside if you think they're not going to fight on Dragon. It's a little bit risky because they might contest the Dragon there, but, like, and I don't think anyone can actually be here because Darius was dead, so I don't really know what he's hovering for. Maybe he's hovering for the Rengar, it's kind of whatever. I don't mind that. So now he's got two items. We're definitively in the mid game here, Nathan. 17:30 in the game, 75 CS. So here's a great screenshot. So a bit of a recap here. What do you see? What are the key points here, Nathan?
Well, I've got a Malphite that is absolutely out of control. Darius is basically worth a minion at this point. My Jarvan is built in pretty squishy. This is a pretty squishy build with Eclipse, but no, it's still fine. And yeah, I mean, we are strong. Completely in control of this game. Every one of my members
two
is
dragons as well.
We have two dragons. We're in complete control.
All out is a down, right? He's got all the tier 3s.
So yeah, we've got Baron coming up in 2 minutes. So as a jungler's perspective, I'm thinking of what's the next objective. So all the tier 1 towers are gone. And then now the tier 2 towers are all alive. So I'm starting to, my mindset is now I need to be chipping away at this. The way that I think about the game is always the side tier 2 towers first. You need to be pressuring sides first. You don't just ARAM mid. We're not going to do anything mid unless we want to straight up dive them. And we're just waiting for the Baron, really.
Relax. Keep your farm up. Keep don't up die. Farm. Yep. I think a really pivotal two pieces of information I think are really important here. Number one, Akshan is actually a level down on Acel. Think about that. He's 6-2. Acel's 1-5. And he's a level down, right? But he's actually at the bottom of level 10. So he actually is over a level behind. The other thing that's worth noting here is that he has a 500 gold shutdown. We have 600 gold shutdown on Jarvan, 500 gold shutdown. So there's a lot of shutdowns, especially for him. He needs to be valuing his life right now. You can't afford to die here.
So this is a very common state in League of Legends. This is what I call the 16 to 20 minute mark death trap when you're really far ahead. Because there's no clear identity, definitive objectives up, this is where fights happen, and this is where shutdowns are thrown. This state of the game, this is actually where most games are thrown in League of Legends when you're really far ahead. This is actually where games get lost.
It's very awkward. Yeah, Baron hasn't yet spawned. You've broken all the towers. This is where people lose their minds and they start to panic and they try to do too much here.
I don't know why I didn't think about that when I first saw this, because I'm just thinking I've won this game.
Yeah, right.
But yes, I can already see what's potentially going to happen here. Yeah.
But also here, you just want to keep up your farm.
Yeah.
You don't really need to overforce anything. So no one's bot side right now. No one's catching bot wave.
The enemy team's win condition at this point is to fight. Even if they die, if they get some trades, they win. They win the
So here he should just be catching bot. I don't know why he's going mid. The wave's already gone. There's no wave mid. Just catch the wave bot. Relax, right? Or even he could get Krugs. Just get Krugs. Nothing else to do on the map right now, right? So he goes mid, takes the 80 carry and supports farm. So now that the Caitlyn and the Alistar have to go bot.
They're so confused. And again, he's doing it to his bot lane. His bot lane's got nothing else to do.
So Jarvan makes the play onto the Malphite. He's hovering his team here. I mean, look, it's a bit weird because, again, he's forced his 80 carry and support all the way on bot side, so it's a bit weird.
This is now technically a 4v3.
Mm. But if your team die, you just got to value your life. You just got to protect yourself. So you can still play it conservatively. Yep, okay. I'm glad that he doesn't suicide there. Aesol is dead. Uh-oh. Looks like he's greeted for the wave a little bit here.
Oh, no. That's rare. Greedy for waves. That is the opposite of what he's been doing the whole game.
Okay. Whoa.
Zymus is a lot of auto- That is the most auto cancels I've seen in my life.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, ultimately, look, this was always an inherently risky play, right? Because, I mean, you are playing around your strong members, to be fair, so I don't mind that. And look, you got to adapt to the chaos. If, like, they're going to siege topside and they're rifting there, you got to be there. So, like, I, from a macro perspective, the only criticism I have is that he should have been bot and then moving, shoving and then moving. Yeah. That's, like, kind of the premise of mid-game, shove and move.
Well, that's not a small thing, guys. That's massive. That's like, big. If we don't understand that part of the game, our mid-game is going to be super... This is what a gold mid-game looks like.
That's right. And then he kind of disrespects here, and then instead of running away, like, it looks like he greeds for the wave here. I think he turns back around for a Q. And then takes a pretty inefficient path, and he looks like he gets kind of chased down by the Thresh here. So that is a big shutdown going over to the Zaya, unfortunately. And this is where, you know, like you said, you know, people giving shutdowns is starting to get a bit messy here.
We pretty much just gave away 3,000 gold swing, maybe. Or 2,000 gold, I think, total right there.
And look at this. Aesol's now scaling slowly, right? Aesol's now two levels ahead, potentially. Two core items. And Zaya's got a big shutdown after that. You've given Zaya a massive shutdown. That Zaya's actually going to be a bit of a problem here. Okay, so he's kind of doing an ARAM here. You don't really want to be sharing mid-farm like this. I mean, I think that if you're coming out of base like this, given Malphite's dead, I mean, I would actually prefer you just go top, shove out top first, and then move down. That way you can, again, make someone react to a side wave. As Akshan, you always want to be creating some sort of a man advantage and shoving and moving. Again, utilizing that stealth. But okay, hovers mid. She has a bunch of farm mid here, so let's take a look at this. So he goes for a siege. And sieging with Akshan's kind of a bit average. It's not like he's sieging. I don't know what he's kind of hiding in the middle of the lane. Aesol already had actually, I believe, we go back here. Had Aesol shown on the map? I don't think he had he? No, he hasn't. So Aesol actually hasn't shown on the map here. Yeah, so Aesol just makes a really, really good play. Coming in from the side, but he gets headbutted out. So that's pretty well played by the alley, in my opinion. Kite's back, pretty well played. You can tell the mechanical part of the game is definitely not his weakness, no. Right? Like, he knows how to, from a sheer clicking perspective, it's not too bad. So I'm saying, you know, the execution needs work, but from a clicking perspective, not too bad. That's a free Baron right there, right? Would you agree?
Yep.
Free Baron. So they basically ace them, essentially, but don't do the Baron, and I've covered that in Lacurtis's Eclipse.
We've done Lacurtis's Eclipse on this end.
Baron over Inhib. Baron over Inhib. Baron over Inhib. But next objective is now going to be Dragon, but the team haven't reset, so you've lost full control. Caitlyn has now got picked off it, and this is... I don't even know. I'm speechless here. This is exactly what I covered in Curtis's Clip Corner. This is the downside of overstaying for Inhib. If you stay for Inhib, look, now you can't get a recall. They're getting chased out of base, right?
Right, so he's going to say this is his team's fault here, though, Curtis.
Right. Okay. Well, then the counter to that is that here you should have been spam pinging on Baron and walking to the Baron. So, you know, at the end of the day, right, you know, what people forget is that they always say, Curtis, but what if they don't listen? Mr. Curtis, what if they don't listen? Well, how do you know if they're not going to listen if you don't do it? Let's say there's a 30% chance they listen. That means, what, nearly a third of the time they're going to listen. So would you rather a 0% chance or a 30% chance? Do the math here. I'll
take my odds on the 30, Curtis.
That's right. And that's even a stretch. If you do good quality pings in advance... make it very clear what you want in the correct situation. I would say that number's way, way higher than 30%. I'm giving you massively...
especially when the team's ahead and everyone's all happy. Everyone's happy-chappy at this point. They'll follow pings a bit more.
That's right. And so now they overstay. There was no commander mindset at all. No even attempt to make the right macro call. No team, no pinging base, nothing. No pinging dragon. Zero communication. You can't be angry at your team for making that decision because you didn't make any effort to contribute to a better quality call. You don't even know what the better quality call was, right, in the first place, right? Well, I'm assuming anyway because he said nothing. And so, you know, Caitlin gets picked, and I'm hope there's no compensation here. Luckily, he doesn't compensate. Team get aced. That's probably Baron. I don't know why the enemy don't do Baron there. You actually get lucky that they don't do Baron. Notice how lucky he's been this game, by the way. Like, genuinely lucky. The stars have aligned from this game, to be honest. Pretty hardcore there. So now the game is really hard, isn't it, Nathan? Game's quite hard. We've given over a lot of shutdowns.
Yep. We've just lost our Dragon Soul win condition.
Lost the Dragon Soul win con. Asol's now scaled because you haven't really translated your lead effectively. And Akshan is that sort of champion. This is where, again, tying back to champ identity really comes into play, right? Your champion, Akshan, gets a lot of prio. That's one of the benefits. It has great wave clear. Spikes a little bit earlier than some champions. Spikes on, like, you know, it's actually quite strong pre-first base. Doesn't mean you can kill people. You get a lot of pressure. But it has not amazing team fighting. Requires you to be quite creative in terms of, like, your mid-game macro. It doesn't have that ease of execution like an Aurelion Sol does. That's the trade-off, right? Aurelion Sol can afford to be a little bit inefficient and be rough around the edges because he doesn't have that agency in the early lane. And if you mess up, that's the one of the benefits of Aurelion Sol. If you mess up and you give shutdowns, you don't end that game properly. Welcome to League of Legends. You've signed that agreement by playing Akshan. This is why you got to understand the strengths and weaknesses of your champion, right? You can win the game however you want to win the game. This is what I say. I said, would you rather win the game over here, like kind of getting an early lead and then translating that early lead to a win? Or would you prefer to win being weaker in the early game, neutralizing, minimizing, stabilizing, and then winning in the mid to late game? You choose. Both are viable.
Yep.
Both are viable. You just got to choose however you want to do it.
And you got to be aware of that's the contract that you're signing.
That's right.
When you queue up for your game and you select that champion.
And Akshan doesn't scale, again, I'm going to make it very clear, because of the way he's played the champion. The build, also the way he's played it. Right? He could have scaled this game. He could have actually, in a way, this may seem weird, but in a kind of outscale the Asol. Like, if you get ahead of Asol, you shut him down. You force Asol on, say, 6-7 CS per minute. You farm 9 CS per minute with good high-quality roams.
You're always one item ahead.
You're so far ahead, there is never a point you don't scale.
No.
That's just the reality of League of Legends. That's what people... This is also something we haven't actually spoke about on the podcast before, I don't think, where people don't get that early game champions scale if played well.
Yes.
Rek'Sai scales amazingly if you play well in the early game. Rumble can scale really bloody well if you play well in the early game. Any champion that farms well, doesn't die, and is ahead of the curve will scale well, period.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, if I get 6 items and I'm against another champ with 6 items, but the thing, if you're playing well all the time, you're always one whole item ahead, which is, you know, 3,000 gold.
That will make up for no matter what stat inefficiency.
And you're, let's say, 27, 28 minutes in the game, you're still popping off with that champ because you have so much gold.
That's right. So now the game is devolving, right, into a bunch of chaos.
Devolving's
right?
A good word, Curtis. I like it.
But he's adapting, right? He's adapting. Let's take a look at this here. Sorry. So,
well, yeah, I don't know if adapting is the word, Curtis. It's just we're just ramming our head at a wall, just going for kill. Fight, kill.
Yeah.
And remember, his team's still relatively far ahead of the enemy team as well. So, you know, we are going to win in some of these fights.
He could Baron here. He could actually ban him. If we go back here, right? Look at this. If he starts spam pinging after Caitlyn comes back up here, because he revived Caitlyn, you can spam ping Baron here. Yeah. Asol has no ult.
Yeah.
You've killed the Rengar, right? You killed the Darius. Asol has no ultimate. That's a Baron, right?
Yep.
That's another Baron.
Yep.
It's another Baron call. Well, we missed that Baron call. Some more... absolute fiesta skirmishes here. We've just got to give up our team. Trading kills from ahead is not really what you want to do. But between all the missed Baron calls,
and this is getting... even another missed Baron call that he just triple res his team and they're all dead. Yeah, he could
have Baron again.
So we've missed three opportunities for Baron.
Many, many Barons. Point. But really what this entire mid game is it's actually all off the back of that overstay for the inhib mid.
Yeah.
Like that's the main like kind of event, isn't it? Right? Yes. Like that ruined your soul. Win condition that you missed a Baron window off of that, and then because everyone was desynced off that inhib, the game now gets elongated and now it's hard. Now look at this. Acel's at three items. Acel's got more items than Akshan.
Even though Akshan has three deaths and Aurelion Sol has eight deaths.
Akshan is 9-3-8 and is behind Acel right now. And Acel's six and got eight deaths. And yeah, this edge, I actually don't even really know how. I mean, you just got to try and create mana advantage. This is where you got to get creative with Akshan. This is where you'd have to really utilize your stealth and get creative. You're not really going to win a straight front to back unless Malphite gets a really great ult, maybe. Just again, with how far behind he is. And this is, again, one of the trade-offs. You've selected a champion that is harder to execute in gold. That's just a reality. So what we're going to do, we're kind of skim forward. I don't really think there's much value from this mid game because it's just all carry.
It's hard for him.
The game's just really, really hard. Essentially, what happens here is that it's stalling out, turns into a bunch of team fights. Acel absolutely pops off in some team fights because now he's...
Wait, we're only still three levels ahead at this point? Okay, yeah.
Yeah, Acel's legit three levels ahead. And then you'll see in a second, this is where I think the typing begins, somewhere around here. Where is it? So we're about to end the game. We'll go to the end because I think there's some interesting insights into the typing, and then we'll kind of expand here. So he gets one shot here, I think, by a Rengar as a full class glass cannon, no armor. Akshan and says, we hate it when a champ just 100 zeros you with no counterplay, so we're buffing Rengar. So basically a jab at Riot for buffing Rengar, getting angry at the champ designs.
This is a common thing. This is the second time he's been blaming champ design. Before was a Rallying Soul was OP when he got solo killed by at level 6-5.
And then now there's a discussion in chat. Acel's, okay, Mr. Permastoth. Because you can create any narrative you want about a champion by just over glorifying one strong aspect yes. of that kit. Right? You could, and now someone's jabbing at Acel and Akshan's stealth, right? And then Akshan's like, why is Acel talking? You were literally 1-6 and now you win automatically. Right? Now blaming, you know, Aurelion Sol, OP champion, right? You're 1-6 and now you automatically win. There's no carrying this, he says in chat. And this is now we're at the end. We've got back to the Pulp Fiction diner and we're here.
Yeah.
Now, you know what's really interesting? Again, tying back to the OPGG, he had a 42% win rate on Acel. How interesting is that? Mm. Like, he's played Acel, you know, and that's how... What does that mean? Like, this is a clear-cut case of delusion and no logic here. This is pure emotion, right? Because if you think about it, right, if Acel was really that strong and bullshit and going 1-6 and win, surely when he played Acel, he would have a positive win rate, right? Because isn't that how it adds up, right? If you're playing the OP champion, it's not OP just because they're playing it. If that was his narrative, right? Like if Acel really was a strong champion, surely you would be having success with it. You can't have both. You choose which one do you want. Is the champ OP and therefore you should just play it. But if you play it and lose with it, what does that mean? You're only left with one outcome, that you're not good at the game. Like you're the pilot of the champion is making critical errors.
Yes, Curtis. Not just that. Remember, if he was to play Aurelion Sol in these games, he's not just any gold for silver one Aurelion Sol player. He's a player that's better than everyone because he gets better KDAs than everyone. And he could do it easily in Challenger and he beats Challenger players.
That's right.
So if by that logic, he should be 670% win rate. He should be going all the way up easy peasy to diamond.
So what I love about this game is that you end the game on 10-5. And a lot of that thing about he's riding the high. He's like, yeah, I beat this Acel. I impacted the map. I roamed everywhere. I got to these kills. I did all these things. But he's failing to see all the small details. And because
I think bigger picture, Curtis, just doesn't understand how gold works in League of Legends. He gave so much gold to Aurelion Sol through the zero pressure and giving him solo kills, all that sort of stuff. And he's just never farming minions. and his roams are all just coin flips. So he just doesn't actually understand of how gold works in League of Legends, how that actually helps you get items to win the game and experience as well.
I think he literally just doesn't understand the game of League of Legends, period.
Absolutely.
Absolute period, in no way, shape, or form.
Even waves, just simple as like, when is the next wave? When can I push a wave to get a
resets, non-existent. You can tell he just doesn't yet, like doesn't value gold. On top of that, you've got to remember that this game could have easily been polar opposite and been a complete 20-minute FF if some of those roams just went the other way. If Rengar was at that rift and was in that bush and he died, game goes a different way. If Malphite loses in the counter pick matchup, Darius beats that Malphite, game goes a different way. This game could go a different way. There's a trillion other alternate realities here where this game is a stomp at a 15-minute FF. But how crazy is that? How crazy is that just through a few decisions here? He could never... It's hard for him to kind of perceive, as you can tell, that a lot of those decisions were just luck. And so where does it leave him, right? Where would you even start, Nathan? If you're a player like this guy, like where do you even start? Like how do you even approach breaking this down?
So these are... I mean, this guy has potential, right? I think this is all stage four issues, really. Oh, okay. Well, it's not. It's the whole pyramid, right? But I think I think the baseline...
Where do you start, yeah?
Is we have to accept our level of play.
Okay.
All right? Because, you know, it's like you've got to accept you've got a problem. Otherwise, you're never going to realize it, right?
That's right. I think that's really what it is. You got to think...
Isn't the step one of Alcoholics Anonymous, is the step one is identifying you have a problem?
I haven't been.
Here we go. We're getting out of our lane again. I've not been down Girls Anonymous either.
Can't say I've been there.
Yeah.
I think you're right. Because really, why I think you got to recognize you have a problem is because you fundamentally have to be curious and open-minded to other possibilities. That's really where it all starts.
He thinks he's better than he is. It stops there. With my clients, all that sort of stuff, it stops there.
There's no going forward from that point.
When you think you're way better than you actually are.
And Akshan is actually such a toxic champion for him to play. Because same for Yuumi. Think about some of the champs that he plays. Like Yuumi is actually a very, very toxic champion for his personality type. That's actually probably why he's drawn to it, to be honest, when you think about it. Like you've kind of fit the champ by your personality. You seek out the champ that fuels what you're looking for in the game, right? With Yuumi, you can be inefficient, sloppy around the edges and get away with it, right? Yuumi hides all of those problems.
All your fundamental weaknesses of the game is hidden in Yuumi, yes.
That's right.
Of understanding the game.
Akshan, in a way, as from a mid lane champ perspective, I mean, it won't hide it in the long run, but in the short term, it can temporarily hide it. Because if you were to play like this on repeat, he would end up like he was in the other one. I think in 47% win rate over 100 and something games. You would lose more than you win like this. It's a flip and a negative flip because you're putting yourself in a lot of shitty situations, right? The only reason why, in my opinion, he was even remotely close in terms of the 40%, high 40% win rates is because mechanics max. He actually has somewhat decent hands, which has got to give him credit. He kind of knows how to control his character, knows how to hold a mouse and keyboard from his time playing WoW.
Makes sense. Based on these mechanics, I would actually say they're probably gold one plat four mechanics.
Yeah. If he can actually learn the game of League of Legends properly, there's no doubt this guy has
potential.
Yeah. But in saying that, everyone has potential. Yes. You can like potential fucking who gives a shit, you know, that's about right. Potential. So it starts with curiosity, being open-minded, and him playing Akshan and shoving and moving around the map and ditching waves is encouraging that kind of narrative. But as you can see, there was so many details, not only in the early end, but the mid-game, the missed Barons, the lack of taking responsibility in terms of communication.
Not going to side lane, not understanding that your bot lane's meant to be going mid once, you know, get in the side lane. Huge lack of understanding of champ identity.
Next to no understanding of your champ's identity.
I remember he mentioned that he had mastery at every champ, and every champ's easy to master.
He has 100k mastery points.
Yeah.
Right? Whatever that means.
This is clearly demonstrating that is not the case.
So this, I love this, Nathan. I really, really love this case study.
Absolutely.
I love putting the gameplay next to someone's narratives because it makes sense. This is exactly what you would expect. Right, you look at those comments and then you look at this gameplay, you could match it up. If someone said, okay, there's all these people in a room, each of them have these narratives and these are the gameplay, we could sit there and mix and match them accurately just by looking at what they do in game. Yeah. It's crazy.
And this is why the game of League of Legends is beautiful and why it's such a good game, guys, because
you can't hide.
You can't hide. You can never hide. The gameplay never lies, ever.
And what there's the last thing I want to talk about this guy is that You know how we did that episode on understanding how there's like kind of like a skill tree for all of the skills in the game? So he's obviously kind of not maxed out, but he's got really high on one of them, which is the micro aspect and whatever it might be. But then he's got really, really low on other ones.
Like negative.
So he's got this massive discrepancy between certain skills that he has. Like his roaming is abysmal. His understanding of golden XP is abysmal. But his hands and some of his skirmishing is actually quite good, right? So that if you kind of add that, you put all that those calculations into the ELO system, boom, pops out. That's what pops out. That
silver
rank.
One,
silver
pops
one,
out.
Gold four. That's what pops out.
Yeah.
Right, and you can just mix and match. And all he has to do, he actually doesn't even need to touch many of his ass, like the skirmishing and stuff. Just bump up the other ones. Just stop roaming like a psychopath. You know, value your XP a little bit more. Focus on getting better quality resets. Playing in accordance to your champion's identity. Bob's your uncle. You'll be pumping it. You'll be P4 in no time.
Yep.
With a little bit of champ mastery.
Yep.
Right. So was there anything else you wanted to deep dive on this one?
No, I think that's really good. I think, I mean, going back to our comments, you know, the comments, I mean, you know, thinking that he, you know, because he beat Challenger players in season 5, you know, that just doesn't, you know.
Okay, you know what he needs to do? He needs to remove Challenger from his vocabulary, yeah. Right? He's not equipped to talk about the game of League of Legends, okay?
No.
Right? You know when we talk about we're getting out of our lane? Right? He is well out of his lane when it comes to League of Legends, right? Unfortunately.
To be making these type of comments like League is not complex or hard to learn.
The thing that...
There's no difference between low elo and high elo.
Look, I don't really want to go too much deeper on this because I think we're giving him too much credit here. But dude, you know, I was really thinking about this off camera. Like, what is the mentality you must have to create a Reddit account, go onto Reddit, write this post... To have the audacity and the disrespect for the game to say this without while not being curious and open-minded and then have the audacity and even like the balls to send your gameplay. Like that is next level. Like that is crazy to me.
Crazy levels of delusion.
That is insane level of delusion. Like that's like me going into something, knowing nothing about it, complaining about it. And then showing my mistakes and then denying my mistakes and like, and I've never done it before or something. It's just weird. It's just weird. I don't resonate. I don't get it.
No.
Right? I don't get it. Anyway, so before we move on to mailbag, there is one little kind of side quest here that I kind of want to kind of cover here quickly. You know, this might get a little bit philosophical, but I think it's an important message, Nathan. I've always had this theory about, like, in my life, how, like, everything's like it's like a roller coaster. So, my life, I truly believe this about everyone's life, we have huge ups and huge downs. We're not constant, right? And we're not all the way at the top all the time. We're not all the way at the bottom all the time. Sometimes we're at the top of the ride and we're having a blast. We can see everything. We're happy. We're having a blast. And, you know, maybe we're on that upward trajectory. Everything's clicking. The stars are aligning. Like, your relationships are good. Your career's going well. You're happy with your job. Your fitness is going well. You're healthy. You know, everything's aligning, right? And you're on this upward trajectory, and you're feeling great. You're waking up motivated. And same thing in League. You've got some great learning objectives. Your champ mastery is clicking. You're gelling with the meta. You've had a few. You're just feeling confident in your gameplay. That's where we make a lot of progress. That's where you start to get some really massive LP gains, but also just big breakthroughs in terms of your understanding of the game and your learning. And so what we all know, is that doesn't last forever. We don't live in that utopia where everything is sunshine and rainbows every day, because if it was, it'd be too easy. What happens is that we go through, I believe, take this with a grain of salt, we go through these phases where one negative thing happens. Could be something in your relationship, something with your work, something with your health. And it starts like kind of like a downward momentum or a downward spiral, right? Or maybe a meta doesn't go your way in League of Legends. Your champ gets nerfed. You don't adjust to that accordingly. Your process goes to shit for whatever reason.
You lose confidence for some time.
That can happen very easily, right? And that's where it starts the downward spiral. Shit doesn't go your way. The stars are unaligned. Right? And that is where we can start. That's where the self-sabotaging behavior can occur. And everything feels shit. And that can last for quite a while. And then we can be at the bottom and we might stay there for a short period of time. A lot of people write to us, whether it's in the BBC or in our programs, like, Curtis, I'm in a hole. I'm at the bottom. We're at the bottom of that roller coaster. What do I do
to get out of it? How do I create some sort of momentum here? How do I get some sort of forward progress? It starts by just taking one step in front of the other and doing one thing in the right direction. People forget. They think that they're just going to watch one video or play one block or do one thing on one day. And that's going to get from the bottom to the top.
Hear one piece of advice. Everyone's looking for that one little sentence that will change their life.
And that's just so far from the truth. It's typically you just got to put one step in front of the other. One day you set one small goal. If I can get up today out of bed, make my breakfast, have to go to the gym, come home, play one block, even with average reviews, I'm happy. Yep. Great. Thumbs up.
Done.
Next day. We start to just really bring it back to things that we can actively control, very, very, very small things. And that's where we start forward momentum. That's where we start to gain a little bit of, see some, I guess, glimmers in the distance. And then with that, with consistency, oh, wow, this is actually, you know, that was actually really cool. I want to do that again. And then we start on that upward trajectory. The reason I wanted to bring this up, Nathan, is because I feel like people, they listen to our podcast, they come to it, they're in our communities, and they see people with success stories, and they see people getting results, and they see people clicking. And, you know, they expect that. They feel guilty because they're not there, like they're not there now. And they also feel guilty because when they lose that, they feel guilty for losing in a way. They feel guilty because they're not there. And they feel like by not sustaining those high periods of like high functioning periods, they feel like they're doing something wrong.
There's something wrong with them.
That's normal. Yeah. No one stays in that high functioning zone of everything's going your way.
No.
Like I had a review this morning. I'm not going to name who it was. You know, they come to me and they said, Curtis, look, I'm playing like shit. I just really got some stage 4 stuff, out of game stuff that's really bothering me. And I said, you can tell they felt guilty and they felt like, oh, I'm sorry for disappointing you. I feel like I'm a failure. No. And I'm like,
you just sit back, you tackle that, then you come back.
And I piss away months sometimes.
You know me, Curtis, I love
it. You're great at that.
I love it. I just accept this is the period, just piss away it, and then we come back.
Sometimes it is okay to have a period of 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 weeks where I don't really make much progress. I'll try not to self-sabotage.
That's the key. As long as you're not absolutely don't self-sabotage.
Super far back.
You can go a little bit back, but don't go...
At least maintain somewhat.
Yeah.
So then when we do get on the bandwagon again, we can start to make some progress. You know, that's what it's all about, right? Don't expect yourself to be able to maintain this crazy level of play and crazy process and all this shit for sustained periods of time. It's just not... We're not AI. We're not like crazy robots, you know? So the reason I wanted to share this is because I think some people forget. They automatically make these assumptions that we have to be on their A game 24/7. Yep. Sometimes you just are just going to go through the motions, right? And that's it.
I think it makes your journey a lot. Once you realize that fact, the journey becomes a lot, I'm not going to say comfortable because the journey
is more enjoyable, I would say just less painful.
Yes, painful.
That's right.
When you're not going to go down those huge self-sabotage of like, oh my God, there's something wrong with me. The world's ending.
That's right. It's very normal. That is very, very normal. We all go through that.
Yeah.
Very important.
I think I agree. I agree with your philosophy there, Curtis.
Awesome. So it must be true. If Nathan agrees with it, it must be true.
That's right. All right, Curtis, I don't think we'll do mailbags today.
No? A bit long, was it?
Yeah, I think we pack in. I think this is, a great case study. Lots of learnings in here.
Beautiful. Well, let us know what you think, guys. Let us know if there's any narratives we didn't tackle.
Yep.
If you'd like us to expand on anything, we'll check out the comments. Otherwise, see you next week. That's it. How long was that?